Welcome to this episode of the Sport Kite Podcast. I am your host, Nick O'Neill, and I want to thank you for tuning in and listening. You may notice that my voice sounds a little bit scratchy. Part of that is because I myself just got back from being in Europe, where I was with Paul DeBacher. We spent some quality time in the dunes talking about kites, and then we also stopped in at a small little kite festival in Bray Dunes, France, and hung out with some folks there. And then as soon as I got back home, it was right into work and coaching and doing all that fun stuff. So yeah, I've kind of lost my voice a little bit, but you know, we still got to do this thing. So yeah, before we get started with the episode, I wanted to give a shout out to all of you that have gone to buymeacoffee.com/sportkite and supported us there. It has done so much in keeping this whole podcast alive. Back around episode 51, I believe, we hit 6,000 downloads total across all the 51 episodes that had been published at that time. So that's in no small part thanks to all of you that have been going and listening and sharing this podcast with your friends, letting other people know about this, or encouraging folks to listen into this and maybe get some deeper knowledge about sport kite flying, a rather specific part of the overall kite experience. So yeah, a big thank you to all of you. And also a huge thank you to all of our other supporters who have either wrote in to us at our email at info@sportkite.org or have sent us messages on Facebook or have just shared some of the content we're putting out there. Every little bit really, really does help. So thank you for that. All right. So let's go ahead and get into this episode. I got a handful of things I wanted to talk about for this one. And the first is kind of about just an overall grassroots approach to sport kite flying. We've talked a lot about it in the past, and I'm going to keep mentioning it because I think if we just kind of keep it at the forefront of our minds, it'll really help us grow the sport. And then the second is actually going to be like really, really digging into the history books and kind of into the history of sport kite flying. I came across a rather interesting article that I wanted to share with folks. So, all right, let's talk about that first one, and that is the grassroots growing of our sport. And that would be when myself and Paul DeBacher were there on the beach in Bray Dunes, France, we met up with several well-renowned sport kite flyers from Europe, including several well-renowned European flyers and the folks from Icky TV. So we got to sit down, we chatted a little bit about sport kite flying. The wind was howling. It was crazy. So we weren't actually able to do a ton of chatting and we weren't able to do a ton of flying because the wind was just ripping down the beach. So much so that you could only fly for maybe 5 minutes before either the kite just completely gave up or your body just couldn't handle flying anymore. So yeah, we didn't get much flying or talking done. We just, you know, kind of hung out and just enjoyed being with fellow kite flyers. But the topic of, you know, growing our sport and getting more people into this came up, and you know, some stuff that's very near and dear to my heart, and that's, you know, the social media side of it. Ooh, rough throat. Anyways, but I kind of just listened to the stories of how each one of these guys kind of got introduced into the sport kite world, most of them back in the 1990s, and also listened to the stories of some new members to their club, how they got involved with this group. And it all harkens back to, you know, the very basics of seeing this activity, and it elicits enough of a response in someone to go look for more information about this activity. And in doing so, maybe they end up on a forum, and maybe they end up making the right connections with the people in their area that can give them more information or meet up with them in person. And when you finally get to that level, typically those people become hooked and they become lifers. And in the past, I'd say predominantly the majority of the first steps along that path that happened at kite festivals and kite events. And definitely, you know, we've seen a tapering off of kite festivals and kite events. And we've kind of been trying to better understand the digital landscape when it comes to kites. So the chasm that was there grew kind of bigger. And this is no shock, no surprise. And this is like the dead horse that I continuously beat. If you ever meet me in person, this is the topic that I love talking about. Much to the annoyance of some of my friends. I believe that we have somewhat done ourselves a disservice by not being a lot more engaged online and using the online space as a replacement for the disappearing kite events and kite fields and interactions there. Because now a lot of people are looking online, they happen to come across something, and they want to learn more. So, of course, what they're going to do is they're going to search online for more information, and then they're going to make connections with those people. And I'm trying to help folks, clubs, individuals, events, all of that. I'm trying to help them kind of have a better online presence. And so that's one of my little side gigs is I do social media consulting. And help out with stuff like that to help people get their stuff in front of the most important eyes, so to speak. Anyways, so, I love to ramble about that topic way too much. I really should stop that. But, you know, I'm just kind of, I'm watching everything happen in the general space, and then I'm also listening to these stories. And a common thread has been that people are like, yeah, you know, like just no one's reached out to me in a long time. And then, of course, that elicits the question from me of like, well, how would they have seen you? And they're like, oh, well, you know, they could have seen me on the beach. And then, of course, I ask, well, how often are you down here on the beach? Oh, well, I come here 3 days out of the year. And it's like, well, of course they're not going to see you. And of course that connection is not going to be made. Or if it does, it's highly by chance if that connection gets made. So that is where I believe social media really can step in, because I just look at some of the posts I do and some of the content I put out there. I mean, hell, I said at the top of this episode that somewhere around the 51 episodes mark, we had a total of 6,000 downloads. And, you know, that's quite a few people listening to all these episodes of Kites. And I'm watching it in real time play out because I'm getting contacted by people who are completely outside of my spheres of acquaintances. You know, people who have really no true concept of the legacy of sport kite flying or kite flying in general. They just came, they saw it, they got interested, and they started searching online, and they happened to come across one of the things that I manage. And so they reach out to me and they have a bunch of questions. I'm watching this in real time, and it is happening rather often. At any given time, I'm managing multiple conversations from folks that they either heard a podcast episode, or they saw a video clip, or they saw something on TikTok, or they saw, you know, something that got put out there and it led them down a rabbit hole, and all of a sudden my name popped up, and so they're reaching out to me asking questions. And I am the first to admit that I am not very knowledgeable about a lot of these things, but what I can do is put you in connection with the people that are. And I spend a lot of time doing that, saying like, oh, hey, you want to know about this? Well, this person are great people to talk to. Let me put you in contact with them. You want to learn on how to do this? Well, here are some resources. And just watching those connections unfold is really cool to see, and I really enjoy it. So, but that's got me thinking about, you know, how can all of us maybe do just a little bit better in kind of creating that kite event or kite field in the virtual space so that we can reach all these folks and start that conversation. And do it from a personal side. You know, I do a lot of business consulting, but some of that advice is not particularly good for the individual, but there are a lot of key concepts that are shared, and, you know, some key performance indicators and stuff like that, that we can look at that could really, really help. And first and foremost, I think the most important thing to do is just to share what you do and what you love and what you're passionate about, and you might be surprised. There are people watching, and it may not be the people that you think would be watching. And, you know, I operate in many circles. I definitely operate in the kite flyers circle, but I also operate in a makerspace circles, and I operate in a roller derby circles, and I operate in a nonprofit communications professionals circles, and I also operate in the circle of influence in my regular day job. And kite flying and kites really are my passion. They are my love. They are pretty much everything to me, and I talk about them nonstop. And yeah, a lot of other kite flyers know this about me, which is great. But to my circle of influence in, say, roller derby, I become the kite person. And I get to introduce a whole bunch of people who are completely outside of that normal kite flyer sphere of influence. And I get to introduce them to kiting. So now I've helped several rather famous skaters that are like, well, can I hold a kite while I go roller skating? And I'm like, absolutely. Like, let's see what we can do to make that one happen. And, you know, watching how they put stuff out there, and I become the expert for them in this sphere of influence. I become the kite expert to them because they don't know otherwise. And then they share it and they spread that out to their spheres of influence. And then, you know, there could be someone that's like 2-3 spheres of influence away from me. I don't know this person directly. And they're like, oh, hey, I saw Indy Jamma Jones did this really cool Instagram reel where she was skating with a kite. And I asked her, you know, what was that? And she said, hey, why don't you talk to Nick? Nick can get you hooked up, right? So I've got someone that I'm chatting with who has no connections to me in the kite world, and now it looks like they're going to be a regular kite flyer. So just looking at stuff like that, that's just from sharing my passion, from sharing my love, and watching other people share their passion and their love, and just creating stuff and putting it out there and enjoying that. So I think that's something all of us can do, because we, we love to talk about kites. And so taking photos of kites and putting up videos of kites, it's not really a selfish act. I guess maybe it is on some level, but it is just about kind of like, I really like this thing and I like sharing this thing. It's so cool, isn't it? And I love seeing what my friends are super passionate about. So yeah, just go share the thing that you're really passionate about and you'd be surprised. You may actually encourage some people to take that second step. Just in being so upright and straightforward about your kite flying. All right, so God, I've rambled for 15 minutes about that, and hopefully I didn't lose you because the second part of this episode I think is pretty cool. And that is, I came across an article in American Kite magazine from winter 1990, and the title of the article definitely caught my eye. It's called Stunting with the Wright Brothers, How the Original Quadliner Became the Original Airplane. And so I'm like, holy crap, you know, here I know the Wright brothers were kite flyers. And of course that went on, they became pioneers in modern aviation or in aviation. But I guess I never really thought about them as essentially sport kite flyers, because they needed the kite to do directional changes and also to do, I don't want to call them tricks because it was more like stalls and just some changes in flight characteristics. And that in itself, by its very definition, I guess, yeah, it means the Wright brothers were sport kite flyers. Oh God, that's so weird to say. And it's, anyways, so yeah, I wanted to read a part of this article and just kind of share some of my thoughts on it. So again, this article is Stunting with the Wright Brothers, How the Original Quadliner Became the Original Airplane. This is by Nick D'Alto in the American Kite Magazine Winter 1990 edition. So here we go. Dayton, Ohio, 1899. A group of boys watches a strange banking and turning in the sky. Suddenly, the thing plunges towards them. As they scramble, the kite sweeps back into the air at its operator's command. In aircraft terminology, they have just been buzzed. Of course, airplanes did not exist in 1899, except in the mind of the remarkable man pulling the kite strings. On the Pinnacle Hilltop outside Dayton, Wilbur Wright would stand and watch the birds in flight, trying to understand more about this fledgling science called aeronautics. Control was the missing ingredient. Wilbur would later conclude that when partly overturned by a gust of wind, if the rear edge of the right wing is twisted upward and the left downward, the bird becomes an animated windmill. It regains its balance. How could the idea be tested? Wilbur's answer, in modern terms, was a high-aspect, stacked, quadline, semi-flexible stunt kite. Inspired in shape by the early gliding machines he had read about, Wilbur's kite would incorporate mechanical features that he first observed in a narrow cardboard box. Namely, a torsion or twisting of the surfaces. Thus, the left angle and right sides of the wings could face the wind at different angles. The kite flying machine sported a framework of pine sticks, two sheets of cloth 60 inches wide and 13 inches deep, provided double deck flying surfaces. Shellac was applied to make the wings airtight. Thin bent ribs ran across the wings to give them the kind of airfoil shape recommended in the textbooks. I'll take a little pause there for a second. So yeah, in this article, there's even a schematic of the control systems and this kind of box kite type shape. And they are creating some torsion in the wings of the kite and creating a disruption between, say, one side of the kite and the other, and that will cause it to turn. And in all practicality, that is exactly what we do with quad line kites in order to make them turn to one side or the other, or to stall them out and make them kind of work down the wind window or up. And yeah, I mean, honestly, I'm just reading this article and my mind is completely blown thinking of how the Wright brothers are some of the original sport kite flyers. Oh man. Yeah. All right. So let me get back into this. We'll jump into all right. So it's talking about how Wilbur Wright was by himself when he did this. He tied lines to the four front corners of the kite. The top cord would move the upper wing backwards or forwards and slant the tail up or down. These maneuvers would make the kite rise or fall. Working one top cord and one bottom cord would twist the wings, causing the inclined wing to rise. Wilbur believed that this action was the secret to both banking and turning. He would use two small rods and wrist action to control his quadliner. The kite had no fins, dihedral, or streamers to steady it. Wilbur believed in active control. Okay. Boom. Mind blown. Yep. Wilbur Wright is a quadline sport kite flyer. Because if you go to, say, kitelife.com and you look at those tutorials, the John Baresi quadline tutorials, I'm fairly certain that's exactly how he describes flying a quadline. It's all in the wrists and it's active control. You pull on the top lines for drive, and you pull on the bottom lines to essentially stall it out, and you use those to make it go up and down, and having a difference between the left and right makes it turn. So that is just pretty dang impressive. All right, so the last little bit of this article. While the kite can be made to execute various maneuvers, they are a little tricky. I did follow the Wright's advice in testing the wing and tail control separately. Although the Wright's differentiated between control, meaning steering, and equilibrium, meaning balance, they expected both from their system. In many ways, that 1899 kite was a microcosm of the Wright's flying experiments. It established the configuration of all of their later planes, as well as their philosophies on flight control and stability. Center of pressure travel, a problem the brothers would solve with their wind tunnel tests, may have caused the downward plunge that started Wilbur's youthful audience that July afternoon. The method of tethering both sides of the kite would later prevent the Wrights from realizing that their wing warping system might cause a dangerous spin in the opposite direction, requiring them to invent a counteracting rudder. Wilbur's answer, in modern terms, was a high-aspect, stacked quadline, semi-flexible stunt kite. The Wrights continued to use kites, flying their 1900 and 1901 full-sized machines from strong ropes and working the controls from the ground. When the wind was strong enough, these became man-carrying kites. Eventually, the kites became gliders. By 1905, the Wrights were flying their now-perfected airplane for hours at a time, but the 1899 kite still played a key part of the for the inventors. It was fitted with a new invention, an automated pilot. The kite crashed and was finally discarded, but the autopilot was later successful and patented. So there's a little bit more to the article, but I'm going to go ahead and just close it out there because I guess I kind of have to change my perspective and look at now the Wright brothers as some of the godfathers of sport kite flying. And it was through just kind of playing around with some ideas. And they kind of went off in one direction. And then other people watched them and other people were inspired. And now you look at, you know, in the grand scheme of things, between them and Hargreaves and a handful of the other pioneers in aviation, that because of their experimentation with kites and because they shared it with other people, we now have a rather robust aviation history and industry. Just like there are so many people that are in love with it. So kind of tying this back to the first half of the episode. I hope folks feel inspired by this different look on the Wright brothers. And I wish I could tell you where you could find this full article digitally, but unfortunately I have yet to find an actual digital archive of American Kite. So at the moment, I know it's at the World Kite Museum, it's in hard copy, and I'm going to continue working with them to try and get some of that digitized so that folks can go in and read all of these glorious, amazing bits of history. Yeah. All right. So this is about a 30-minute episode. I'm going to go ahead and close out here. I've got some really good stuff lined up ahead for some of the coming episodes. More interviews, more chats. Some tips, techniques, tricks, how to perfect some stuff. We do got the sport kite camp coming up, so that's going to be a lot of fun. The next few episodes are going to be kind of dedicated to that, and some of the stuff that goes on there, some of the stuff we share. So those of you that are unable to come, we still want you to be a part of it, and we'll be including that in some of our upcoming episodes. So this is a bit rambly, so beg my pardon, or beg your pardon. It's late at night. I'm tired, and my voice is pretty sore and scratchy, but I have had a great time kind of reading up on the Wright brothers and just kind of sharing the passion of kite flying with others. So go out and share your passion for this sport and everything about it. I look forward to hearing from all of you. You can reach out to me directly either on Facebook, or you can send an email to info@sportkite.org and we'll try and respond. It takes a few days for me to respond to those emails, but I usually get around to them. So thank you for listening, and I will catch you on the next one. Bye!